Welcome to the Angaza Forum podcast, where we engage in dynamic conversation with industry leaders and trailblazers on the profound impact of the financial service sector in driving sustainable development. In this podcast, we shine a spotlight on the vital role of women in the financial sector and their contributions to shaping a more inclusive and progressive financial sector. This podcast series complements our in-person convenings, which take place across Africa. Our next event will be held in Nairobi, Kenya, this October 16th and 17th. To register, visit our website at angazaforums.com. That is angazaforums.com. My name is Ali Mwakanenogakweli, and the topic for today is Navigating Transformation, Insurance Industry Insights. Now, in this podcast, we will delve into the remarkable journey of Rina Munusami. Rina is distinguished as an Angaza Awardee 2024 honoree for her outstanding leadership. Currently, she's serving as a Group Chief Services Officer at National Insurance Co. Limited in Mauritius. Rina's strategic acumen and operational expertise has been pivotal in steering the company through intricate transformations within the insurance sector. Her achievements, including navigating substantial organizational shifts and driving significant cost reductions, is part of what we'll talk about today. Welcome to the podcast, Rina. We're happy to have you.
Thank you, Ali. And thank you and the Angaza Forum for setting up this platform and providing me with the opportunity to share my insights in this unavoidable sector of the global economy.
Absolutely. Now, Rina, tell me, with your experience overseeing major transformations and acquisitions within the insurance sector, how do you assess the evolving landscape in the sector?
In my view, the insurance sector has long been generally passive. Mm-hmm. But in more recent years, and even in Mauritius, we are seeing that, it has been undergoing some significant transformation. Firstly, attributable to major emerging hazards on the global front and locally as well. And these new emerging hazards are awakening the dormancy of the industry, if I may say so. The pandemic, for instance, in the life insurance industry has repositioned the importance of a life insurance in one's portfolio. We are seeing alongside the emergence of new health hazards, such as the Mpox, which is highly contagious. So all of these are going to have likely effects on both the health and travel insurance, more so with the reopening of international frontiers and the global number of travelers shooting to pre-COVID levels. Secondly, I also see the global aging phenomenon coupled with the gradual lessening of governmental support in pensions. I think this is also shifting the focus on retirement and long-term pension plans, including annuity products that allow for a lifelong stream of income. And very importantly, climate change causing a surge in natural disasters is becoming an increasingly unforeseeable hazard in matters of general insurance. And this is resulting in major claims of unprecedented nature. Earlier this year, we had a major cyclone in Mauritius, and we've seen so many vehicles, for instance, trapped in the flood. So this is leading insurers to review not only their risk models, but also their underwriting and investment practice. And where possible, they would need to invest in ESG favorable industries and refrain from supporting sectors that might potentially exacerbate adverse environmental impact. Although this is itself quite tricky because they are called to simultaneously also balance their return on investments, which is a core factor for their survival.
So against this background, what trends are facing the industry currently?
I see InsurTech evolving at higher than expected speed, with insurance companies embracing digital transformation.
Okay, so I'm happy you've mentioned InsurTech, Rina. And in Kenya, InsurTech has speaking up, especially in motor vehicle insurance, where we're seeing young players come in innovations that help to track driver behavior and sort of reward good drivers and and inform how they pay premiums. How does InsurTech manifest in the Mauritius market?
In the Mauritius market, I must say that InsurTech is still in its infant stages. So insurers are probing, and obviously things are going to move very fast because there is the Internet of Things, which is very pervasive in Mauritius, is across board. And most of the consumer groups are now technologically savvy. And, you know, there are so many more options and accessible options nowadays. Telematics is not there yet, but there are several solutions that are now available, behavioral economics as well, how people are behaving, how their lifestyle. We are not there yet as the South African or maybe the Kenya market, but it is going to pick up in due course. But what I would like to highlight is that technological innovation is enhancing efficiency and reducing costs significantly. And the way we are embracing it, we are embracing it in terms of having the process automation, the robotics in the back office operations. And I think this is very important because it is also at the same time showing a much lower reliance on an already scanty technical talent pool within the industry. Technical capability is a challenge right now in Mauritius, especially on the insurance front. So I believe that InsurTech on the African continent, and of course also in Mauritius, is going to improve the sector's resilience with higher productivity and also medium to long-term savings. And digital innovation bundled with AI is also going to improve a lot of the customer experience altogether. Because again, as I mentioned earlier, customers are demanding more rather than less, more convenience, real-time information, more transparency, bespoke services, quasi-instantaneous support, including the refunds and seamless transactions. So this is how I see InsurTech evolving and influencing the industry.
From your experience in governance, what are your views on prevailing regulatory approaches within the industry?
I see rising costs of compliance within a more stringent regulatory landscape, which is focusing on strict licensing requirements and consumer protection on the one hand. And on the other hand, I see a tendency by regulators to externalize the burden of both compliance and regulation on principles and risk-based approaches onto the insurers themselves. And I see that this quasi-self regulation approach can be a double-edged sword in my view. Because
in what way?
Yeah, because players can find themselves in a compliance mode and yet face heavy tolls when unfortunate events arise that might reveal important omissions or reckless practices. Because you see, they are kind of judging party at the same time. And it is really very tricky when you're saying that use your intellect, use your judgment to assess whether this merits more of compliance or less of compliance. I believe also that regulatory demands will increasingly focus on ESG compliance, AI regulations, because as we said, all of the InsurTech and the artificial intelligence behind those systems, and how insurers are going to ensure that these new tools are going to be used in a very responsible and ethical manner. So that would compel insurers to alter their conventional work methods to embrace these upcoming requirements and build more resilience as well.
Great insights, Rina. Are there any other trends worth mentioning as we wrap up this part?
Yeah, there seems to be consolidation of activities for better competitiveness. So at the same time, a rise in the outsourcing of both specialized skills and non-core activities. And I think this is quite unique. This is quite a unique trend which is happening, which is evolving, and we can see it again also in Mauritius, almost the outliers of the core operation. Previously, when we used to talk about outsourcing, for instance, we would be focusing on our core operations and outsource the non-core activity. I see this trend evolving slightly now to say that the very specialized skills, it's probably more cost effective to outsource these as well. So with lesser barriers to entry, we can see banks and fintech companies creeping in and knowing a share of the market. And it is that kind of strategy that probably will also help insurers engage on a more competitive front. So I see more opening of shareholding stakes, mergers and acquisitions. And I think these strategies are allowing insurance companies to scale up, diversify their portfolios, and also reach out to new markets to gain competitive advantage and achieve their growth objective. And as I just mentioned earlier, above all, I see concerns, major concerns on the availability of the requisite talent pool, especially professionals with holistic capabilities. So according to me, there will be major pressures on culture alignment because of the M&As in light of the portfolio consolidation and the need to adapt with the entrepreneurial mindset of the new workforce as well. So with lots of outsourcing going on of the specialized skills, this is how we get all of these stakeholders henceforth really converge in terms of the internal set of strategic objectives. And there will be also important focus, in my view, on the financing of the digital infrastructure with the need to embrace more of the digital innovation and to get into the insurtech kind of arena, and lots of more focus as well on compliance due to growing regulatory scrutiny.
I like that you've mentioned the different complexities in the industry. For example, the rise of diseases. You know, we had COVID and we got over that, and then we have MPOX, and how outsourcing both a specialized talent and more generic part of the talent pool could pose a double-edged sword. And I'd like to say the other side of things. How can companies address these challenges effectively to grow and form a more stable insurance sector?
In light of the changes I just mentioned, there are indeed a number of challenges which insurers are facing. And addressing them will require, in my view, foresightedness, strategic decision-making, culture alignment, and timely investment in technology, all while keeping in check compliance through prudent management, consumer protection, and ethical business practice.
Interesting. Could we elaborate on this?
So firstly, a highly significant concern is about the issue of insurance penetration to close protection gaps in light of the rising cost of claim. So we have already witnessed major inflationary effects on medical insurance, following material rises in price charged for healthcare services following the pandemic. And similar effects occur on motor insurance as well, with a constant rise in the number of vehicles on the road year after year, estimated at 3-4% per annum. And I'm sure this kind of trend also applies to the African continent. And then there is a surge in the cost of repairs as a result of more sophisticated technology. Electric vehicles, for example, are much more costly to repair than their predecessor fuel-based models. So additionally, I also see there are higher costs of freight, and these will adversely impact on property claims with higher costs of reconstruction when insured perils occur. So these trends impact negatively on the underwriting profits and reserve adequacy of insurers, and it will cause insurers to de-risk through both repricing and reinsurance. And this will in turn place pressures on premium rates and higher purchasing costs on prospective customers willing to avail of such protective device.
You mentioned InsurTech earlier as an important development in the industry. Are there any challenges on the technological front?
On the adoption of the new technology, the InsurTech that we just mentioned, there are lots of pressures to phase out these legacy systems, automate processes, modernize operations through cost-effective solutions. And this type of challenge will require a new approach to business model rethinking itself. For instance, the use of cloud-based solutions. I don't see insurers investing heavily now in in-house infrastructure. We can already see this is not so cost-effective. And we will need data science skills for in-depth data mining and analytics. You mentioned a bit earlier the telematics. So all of that will require lots of analysis. We also have blockchain technology to streamline processes, enhance transparency in transactions, and reduce fraud. And of course, the leveraging of AI and machine learning for continual adjustment of the risk parameters. I believe that strategic alliances with insurtech companies for more synergies would potentially accelerate digital transformation for the insurer and at the same time possibly provide robust investment and development platforms for the incumbent technological startup. I see this as a way to embrace this new journey in a prudent way, and in a way that allows insurers and gives them that kind of breathing space in terms of the investment they will have to put through to embrace this new journey of digital innovation. And then I think also together with this digital innovation journey, there are data risks associated with machine control, the web of networks, data collection, its storage, its sharing, and especially as insurers are increasingly faced with threats of data breaches and cyber attacks. So in addition to investing in new technology for efficiency, insurers must consider establishing clear data governance policies, implementing data protection and privacy measures, including robust cybersecurity practices, such as multi-factor authentication, data encryption, training their workforce on data usage, data sharing, and other safeguards. And importantly, conducting ongoing monitoring for effectiveness of the policies and the data protection standards that the institution have. And what comes to my mind as well is alongside, as they're going to do that for themselves, as they face increasing demands for cyber insurance, because there is this internet of things phenomenon and everyone really embracing on technological waves. I think insurers ought to also adopt similar approaches when they are underwriting cyber risk.
You talked about climate change earlier. Could you build upon that?
Climate risks are more frequent and will require a change in underwriting methods as insurers learn to navigate uncertainty in these uncharted waters. So on the one hand, I see a smoothing in premium rates, given the inconsistencies and non-predictability of events. For instance, right now in Mauritius, we are having a cyclone, and I've never heard throughout the years that we have a cyclone in winter. So because of this inability to predict the climatic hazards, the premiums could be smoothened out. We could be having standard premium rates because in any case, a high risk and a medium risk, you know, kind of merge together and they are really kind of become fungible, if I can say so. But on the other hand, I also see insurers possibly moving towards the adoption of more granular and parameter-driven consideration. And this is what is called also parametric insurance. So, you know, you really drill down to the sector. And this is being used also globally. So I think there would be a tendency and a kind of equilibrium, sometimes using this parametric-driven underwriting. And sometimes, if there is no data, then having that kind of standard rating. Because what I mean is that insurers need to review, therefore, their risk models to incorporate more in-depth predictive analytics. Because historical data alone would not be sufficient to forecast future claim patterns. So I therefore see more of generative AI as predictive inputs to forecasting models, given its unique capability in harnessing unstructured data, and probably also even extending to factoring climate-induced health vulnerabilities into their actual models. Because climate change obviously affects the whole chain of the ecosystem and also generating health hazards for the population. So I foresee the introduction of innovative insurance products like parametric insurance, as I just mentioned, taking prominence to curb climate-related risk. How it works is that they are geared towards settlement of a payment, not based on indemnifying an actual loss that arises from an insured event, but rather upon that event meeting certain criteria, such as, you know, exceeding a predefined intensity threshold. For instance, if you are insuring against earthquake, because these things, let's say, are not too predictable, we will say if there is an earthquake, normally the conventional way is that we would indemnify against whatever losses
the damages of the
arise.
Earthquake.
Exactly. But right. The way parametric insurance works is that you say, if the earthquake reaches a certain level on the Richter scale, for instance, this is when we're going to pay for the loss. So this will be, I think, a critical competitive differentiating lever and largely assist insurers in sustaining economic losses on claims intimated in relation to climate change. What I also see is a potential rise in the demand for the usage-based insurance. So we were mentioning a bit earlier on telematics, and it's true that insurers are thinking how to embrace this insured journey, where to really start and end, because it starts with the automation of their in-house processes, etc. But at the same time, there will be a demand in the usage-based insurance, and that would potentially also affect insurers' margins, especially, as we said, the introduction of telematics and behavioral economics in the industry. And already we can see that in motor insurance. I don't know about Kenya or other countries in Africa, but in Mauritius, for instance, if you've got a car and you are selling it, for instance, you will not be charging the whole year's premium for a shorter period, for instance. We are also getting lots of customers, if they are traveling abroad, they haven't been using their vehicle, they are looking for a revised premium rate. So this kind of usage-based insurance will become probably more popular, and that will force, that will cause us to really in the right systems for them to actually monitor the usage in a more accurate way and curb the tendency if there are fraudulent claims and so on. We will need to adjust to that kind of demand from the customer. And I also believe that the promotion of catastrophe bonds would help insurers sustain economic losses in the event of natural disasters, especially as higher loss ratios on property claims will also represent a major hurdle to obtain reinsurance capacity. So with the climate change, let me explain, we are going to have more and more claims and claims of higher value. So obviously, protect themselves, the insurers will need to look for capacity, reinsurance capacity, to back them up. And that's going to be, I believe, quite a struggle in coming years. And there is a solution to that, which is already being used in certain jurisdictions. We call them catastrophe bonds or CAT bonds. They are, in fact, short-term unit-linked bonds that guarantee stable, high-yield interest payments to investors, the bondholders, but that would cater also for deferred or forfeited funds in the event the predefined catastrophe event materializes. So typically the high risk, high return trade-off. So this is also one way that could potentially help insurers to mitigate against that kind of risk that they would definitely be facing in the near future.
Circling back to your point on limited talents earlier, from your experience in leadership and HR, can you tell us about this challenge facing the industry?
We talked about the availability of relevant skill sets, which is already a problem because the insurance industry is already facing serious capability gaps on insurance knowledge and also data science, cybersecurity, digital innovation. Whilst there seems to be a drive towards specialization, the insurance industry will require talents, as I said a bit earlier, the holistic approach kind of profile, the talents that can really navigate through both business breadths and technical depth for that holistic approach to decision making. So insurers, I believe, would need to breed a high-performing, agile workforce with strong critical analysis skills that blend easily into and adapt to faster evolving work culture. So along with that comes the issue of compensation and career evolution strategies, which would more than ever need to be more transparent and flexible. So I believe another strategy for insurers would be to establish also partnerships with academic institutions and enable a work from anywhere in the world kind of move to embrace that kind of challenge with a skill set.
Tell us now about market threats within the insurance sector. How can players better cope with them?
From a market perspective, increased competition and market saturation are going to be also prominent threats with new players in the landscape, especially for small economies like Mauritius, for instance. But it could also be impacting certain jurisdictions on the African continent, I believe. Innovation, co-insurance, co-product development, embedded insurance offerings, M&As and partnerships would be strategies that will definitely help insurers better consolidate their position. I see consumers now increasingly purchasing insurance when they need it rather than the long-term intended protection device it used to be. So basically causing insurance to undergo a kind of transformational shift from being a nice-to-have purchase in one's basket of goods to a must-have item henceforth. So embedded insurance and bundle offerings appear to be insurance pathways of the future. So another tendency in some markets is peer-to-peer insurance with small groups of individuals pulling together to benefit from preferential or group rates and agreeing to share the cost of minor claims in return or being, you know, denied coverage should any one of them fail to pay their share of premium. The trends likely to shape the landscape of insurance also as we go along. Insurers will need, therefore, to gear towards that kind of change that's going to impact their conventional way of operating.
Insightful. Could you speak about investment, which is a critical performance factor in the insurance industry?
On the investment front, the volatile economic environment remains a precarious growth factor in the insurance industry. It threatens their investment income and impacts their underwriting profits and financial stability. So the need for prudent portfolio diversification and consideration of alternative investments would be important moves in this area. Of course, they will need to continue having using utmost vigilance in their fundamental processes of risk underwriting and claims assessment. So I think that policy wording would rather need to be now much more specific than generic to clearly determine the obligations of the insurer, because also the consumer is becoming more knowledgeable, and insurers would not want to have certain clauses, contractual clauses or provisions that could be subject to interpretation or misinterpretation. And finally, but very importantly, I'd like also to make a point about capital management. With the rising pressures on capital management from a regulatory standpoint, I fear the tendency by insurers to move towards capital-light products for optimal capital positions and returns, which means, in effect, moving away from capital-intensive long-term insurance business line. I mentioned at the beginning that the pandemic has kind of revived the need to have long-term life insurance, for instance, in anyone's portfolio. I mentioned about the government lessening support, or the tendency for governments to lessen support on the pension front, which means that people would tend to want to go towards that kind of pension products or annuity products as an alternative. But if insurers do move towards capital-light products, then this may pose significant threats to meeting the demands of the societal requirements for life insurance and annuity products. Although at the same time, it can represent a captive niche for some more daring players. And we can already see that. I can say in the local landscape, for instance, we've got many players in the insurance industry, but the majority of them are on the general side, which is a short-term insurance, which is very utility-driven. You know, it is about what you need, the health insurance, the motor insurance, the home insurance.
So mostly the products that would have like the highest number of subscribers because of demand.
Yes.
Right.
But also very importantly is because of the capital requirements, because you need to have strong reserves, for instance, if you want to put in place a product for the longer term, basically the pension product, the life insurance product. So with the regulations that I mentioned, the tendency for the regulations to shift a bit more on consumer protection and have very stringent rules for operating by the insurers, so there could be, in the medium to longer term, lesser players willing to indulge in the long-term insurance industry. That's a bit my personal.
I want to focus on one point, although I'm curious about the others, but I really would like to double down on innovation, because I feel like innovation then touches on multiple concerns of the industry. On one hand, growth, on the other hand, customer experience and the ethics of providing a product that solves customers' problems without bringing new complications. And in this case, how do you balance effective risk management with innovation and technological advancement to enhance customer experience and operational efficiency? Are there any examples that you could share with us that sort of balance risk and innovation?
Yeah, I can give you some insights of how we approach it, for instance, in our company. It requires, in fact, to balance this risk management with innovation and technological advancement, would require an integrated approach that considers the outcome we seek to achieve in terms of enhanced customer experience and operational efficiency on the one side, and the risk posed by the new systems we seek to implement on the other. So governance risk, data security, investment, operational compliance, and reputational risk. So, for instance, prior to launching, I can give that example, our own internal mobility platform, we have undertaken a number of steps that included project sign-off from relevant in-house stakeholders to gauge their observations, areas requiring attention, and corrective actions being warranted. We also need to provide for sufficient time for pilot runs within a diverse and controlled representative group of individuals.
Like some sort of a sandbox. We have done that.
Yes, we have done that, for instance, again, for the mobility platform, because that was quite innovative. We've done that with our own internal workforce to see how they react, whether they can send their claims on it, and whether the registration kind of experience was fine. So getting that pulse from a controlled group, you know, before going out there and then maybe running the risk of suffering collateral damage from reputation or bad customer experience. And I think the approach also of phasing the release of the various product features, a controlled kind of release, that also helps in a multi-dimensional project, which can have far-reaching ramifications. And scenario planning, stress testing, and ethical hacking attempts that allow the team to think critically through potential points of failure, you know, in a bid to address them prior launch and with clear contingency plans and their deployment. We have had our own IT team, for instance, try to see whether they can hack the system, whether they can access the data that would be required to use on that system. So these are some of the strategies or approaches that can be adopted. And then when we talk about risk management in innovation, what is really critical is employee engagement. So fostering an organizational culture that stays abreast with innovation whilst keeping a mindful eye on emerging risks and allowable risk tolerance thresholds is a key success factor, according to me. And very importantly, in that endeavor, empowering them to take necessary actions, including escalations, when they identify inconsistencies on potential issues. So how to escalate, when to escalate are also important, although they should be given the means to know what to do if there is that kind of issue. And there are also game-changing ways to collaborate with technology solution providers and innovative arrangements that can allow, you know, for some skin in the game in the engagement process, basically arrangements that create an opportunity for the providers to at the same time showcase their capabilities whilst not taking on the full development risk associated with an innovative solution at one go. And as I said, insurers have long been quite prudent in just going for mind-blowing changes at one go. And I think this kind of approach would really support them to embrace that journey in a more prudent way, which is very inherent to their DNA. And another approach would be to consider amortizing the associated costs over a medium time span that caters for the realization, for instance, of some interim benefits prior triggering the heavy cash flows that typically concern such investments. So this is an approach, for instance, we are adopting in the implementation of robotics within our process automation kind of projects, for example. And then there is the importance of engagement with other industry players or working in collaboration with regulatory authorities and policymakers on projects likely to impact a broader community or ecosystem. This helps, in fact, towards framing relevant stakeholders towards goal convergence and alignment of interest. And that kind of approach has been successfully applied locally to institutionalize the implementation of a database for motor insurance claims at the country level. This is the way that it has been approached in Mauritius. And I think it's been a successful collaboration with all players that are concerned. And finally, there is a need for continuous monitoring and reporting of experience and insights to ensure project outcomes do not get off track and remain relevant to the intended objective.
it's always important to have that back and forth, especially when it comes to the balance of innovation and risk. And I especially relate to the point on testing innovation within a very, very controlled environment or a controlled group of customers and stakeholders, just to see how it affects the greater market should it hit the market. And Rina, maybe my final question for this interview would be, since you've been recognized as an Angaza Awardee 2024 honoree, how do you believe this acknowledgement contributes to advancing African women in the financial sector in general?
First, I would like to think that it shows other women that such accolades are possible and accessible. The Angaza Awards is a platform that allows women in Africa to be on the podium and showcase their contributions in the sector and their achievements. It is a definite encouragement and inspiration for those who aspire to demonstrate their leadership in the financial services sector, and crucially, challenges gender stereotypes that once held prominence in this domain. So it boosts the confidence of women and hopefully helps them break the glass ceiling that they may believe exists, which often gets them stuck in entry or mid-layer roles. I say that Angaza Awards can empower women and inspire them to push for further professional development in the financial sector, which can potentially appear to be quite intimidating, by the way. So this empowerment is fundamental also to society, more so, since we're talking about insurance, considering the statistically proven higher longevity of women as compared to men. And the fact that at the end of the day, much of the household assets ultimately land up in their lap for management in the long run. So the Angaza Awards can gradually become a powerful platform that allows women to find their voice and pledge for policy reforms and advocacy of new thinking. This can turn them into respected influencers that can help shape for a better future on the continent. Possibly encourage others to follow their steps, promote definitely more diversity, inclusion and equity, and ultimately, hopefully, shift the narrative on the contribution of women on a broader front.
Thank you so much, Rina. I love the part where you say the Angaza Awards is a platform that will help spotlight women and hopefully help in driving change through providing more room for their contributions in policy. And I feel like there's a lot of space for that at organizational and regional and ultimately global level. And
yeah,
thank you for sharing. And thank you for sharing your thoughts on this. Maybe a key takeaway for me is, again, the importance of balancing between innovation and customer and stakeholder concern, and the 360 degrees nature in application of innovative products, innovative strategies, and sometimes tools like M&S in solving industry challenges. As we close this interview in 1 minute, what is the one thing anyone who listens to this should know?
I'm inclined to say that the insurance industry would gain much in adopting an even more agile approach in the boardroom, with bold decisions being taken on replacement of legacy systems and process automation powered by AI, and pertinent discussions focusing on ESG concerns and climate risk, taking prominence on the board oversight agenda in addition to financial and marketing. I also see much focus on growth drivers within the different classes of insurance business and discussions on risk parameters for an informed and balanced approach to determining future risk appetites. So this would concurrently, probably to wrap up on that, imply raising the risk management culture at operational level, furthering more holistic and informed decision-making within underwriting and claims assessment process. And that's going to be a major shift from viewing each new risk on its own and extending the analysis to its potential contribution and impact on the overall portfolio, a function that has predominantly been centered and restricted to the control points in the hierarchy. So this approach would really go a long way towards furthering the operations understanding of the dangers associated with a silo view of risk being underwritten, and the critical need to consider their interoperability and interdependence, so to speak, within the broader context of portfolio management. That would be empowering as they learn to gear up not only for known risks, but also to build the competencies required to identify, deal with, and very importantly, adapt swiftly to unforeseen and new emerging risks and challenges. And I believe this methodology is especially relevant for insurers of the African continent because of Africa's proneness to the climate change crisis due to its inherent vulnerabilities, be it from a geographical and biodiversity perspective, its delicate reliance on agriculture as an economic lever, its exposure to ensuing health hazards, also the adaptive capability of its countries to invest in infrastructure, especially digital infrastructure, or the overall impact of climate change on the resilience of the African social tapestry at large. So yes, definitely a meaningful and thorough conversation to carry on the agenda in the continent.
Thank you, Rina. And thank you again for making time to speak on this podcast. There are definitely gems of insights that you have dropped on multiple aspects affecting the industry and how this forum, the Angaza Forum, helps to contribute for providing a platform for women in the African financial space. Thank you again. We look forward to hearing from you at the Angaza Forums, which is going to be on the 16th and 17th in Nairobi. For more information about the Angaza Forum for listeners, please visit our website, that is www.angazaforums.com, and connect with us on LinkedIn and X. Have a lovely day.